So first up, there we've had a couple releases from your office in the last week or so with issues that are definitely relevant to Talkeetna. The first being flood insurance and the delay on or the I guess the limitation of rate increases. What do you see being the long-term outcome of all this now, since they are going to have to do this new affordability study and things like that?
Well, I think it's good for the homeowners in a lot of ways. First off, it delays the increases, in other words, it puts a limit of premium increases versus just 100% carried by the homeowners, which is one of the threats that some people wanted in Congress. So it does create some limits and some caps. Second, the affordability study was important long-term just to understand what this all means. And at the end of the day, the goal is not to have insurance rates so high that people can't afford to pay them and live in their homes that they have had for many, many years. And the flood insurance is an important part of the ability to live in some of the homes, especially near waterways, or in our case, in some of the areas that are very flat and very low and near wetland areas or flood zone areas.
Okay, and one of the other things that's referenced is, the subsidies for flood insurance are going to be continuing to be scaled down, and you cite the need for a long-term solution for solvency, basically for the program. So where do you see that headed?
Well, I think the basic question, and this is one that I think everyone's struggling with, is how much do we collectively as a community and a society pay for part of this insurance? And I think that's the big question. And I think there is a role. Some view there is no role at all. And what you want to do is balance this very carefully, especially as there's dramatic changes in the climate and changing patterns of where people are living today may not be considered fully flood zones, and suddenly you're in it. I mean, take the Sandy flood that came into New York, New Jersey. Look how far that went in. No one would have anticipated that. And yet, I guarantee you a sizable amount of those folks deep into the communities didn't have flood insurance because it wasn't necessary. And so we have to be very aware that where there's flood zones today may be dramatically different in very short order. So we have a role to recognize that the property owner in their primary residence can afford to live there. Now, there are some that have secondary residence in very well-to-do areas and have the income and capacity, and so we'll have to look at it from that end also. So it's a very carefully balanced approach that we have to have over the long haul in making sure that people who have homes as primary residents who are living in flood zones or potentially could be living in flood zones depending on weather pattern changes, that they are not driven out of their homes because of insurance rates.
Okay. And if we can go on to the other topic that caught my eye as being locally relevant here, and that's the excise tax on small air carriers. Obviously, Talkeetna is a big aviation town. All of the climbers on Denali fly out of Talkeetna, as well as a big sightseeing operation that goes out of there. So, as what exactly the letter that you got from the IRS, what exactly is the implication of that?
Well, we're tomorrow, my staff will be meeting with the IRS again to get some further detail and clarification on the letter, but I think it's a good first step. It really clearly says that they recognize there are some issues with how they have been taxing individuals who are doing one-day sightseeing activities or fly fishing or hiking, those types of activities. And the note in the letter also that I thought was very powerful was the fact that they're willing to consider retroactive, which means some of these folks who have been potentially at risk for a lot of money for their one day or their fly fishing or hiking or flight seeing programs are able to go back several years and get it rectified rather than just saying, okay, IRS saying, we're sorry we made a mistake, and then move forward. I think that's a good step. But to be clear, it is not 100% clear on what the IRS says about the longer-term lodge and so forth, and we want to get meeting with those folks, which we'll see them tomorrow. Our staff was going to meet with them today, but because of the weather changes in D.C. with the snow, the government was shut down, so we couldn't get our meeting. So tomorrow we'll meet with them. But the real issue here is very simple, and that is the IRS made a determination to reclassify certain types of air carriers, which made no sense because it clearly was different than the way the FAA qualifies them or classifies them. And the reality is people who are knowledgeable in this area, who understand what flight scene is, what transporting to a lodge or what regular service is the FAA. And that's what the IRS should be looking toward, not to their own made-up rules because they want to collect more revenue off of people. They should look to the FAA and the folks that actually deal with aviation to determine what the right classifications are, not something the IRS just dreams up because they want revenue streams.
Okay. And I've got something here, some statements by Joy Journay of the Alaska Air Carriers Association. She seems pretty skeptical that this is actually going to provide a long-term fix, basically that the IRS could retroactively help out the folks who have been audited, but then that they could go right back to charging this tax again in a month. And the implication here is definitely that they plan to do that. So are those some of the answers you're looking for?
Yes, absolutely. That's why we intend to have this meeting with them to get to the next stage, and that is, the bottom line is they don't need to have these new classifications because they think they know best about aviation. They don't. The FAA is the responsible agency to determine classifications for air carriers, and that's who we should be following. For the IRS just to dream it up for their own who knows what reason, I think is irresponsible on their part, and I think goes beyond their authority as a a revenue collection agency for the federal government.
Okay. And now I've got like a few questions that I've gotten from folks around town after we put it out on our Facebook.
Okay.
First one is HJR9. You referenced it quite a bit during your legislative address down in Juneau.
This is the education one.
Yes. It has since been pulled from the floor and back to rules. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's clear they don't have the votes for it because I think the majority of the Senate recognizes that that's a poor public policy. The greatest equalizer in this country and in our state is public education. And for them to start now coming up with some new scheme because they don't like the way some of the programs work is irresponsible on their part. And what they should do is focus on how to improve education. We have one of the best education systems. That's why we have 77,000 veterans that live here in the state, because if you ask many of the active military that I do, why do they come back to Alaska? Not only for the great beauty and the opportunities here, but because we have one of the best education systems, and these guys go around to all these different locations around the country, and they realize that Alaska has a lot to offer, and we have a great public education system, and for the Senate or the House, the majorities down there decide that they don't like it because maybe of one or two little issues, I think is totally irresponsible. I think the public is speaking out pretty loud and clear on this, and as you probably got a sense there, I don't think they really cared for my comments, but they attempted to bring that bill forward and didn't make it because they didn't have the votes.
Okay, yeah, in fact, I spoke to Mike Dunleavy, is the senator for KTNA's listening area. So,
well, I apologize to the listeners that I disagree with him, but let me just make it clear that I think his idea here is misguided and not really the right direction for providing public education, especially in small rural areas where it may be very difficult to have another source of public education available to them.
Okay. So the next one that I've got from some of the listeners here is, what would you say the top three issues facing Alaskans today?
Well, I think the biggest, obviously, is a stabilized economy, making sure that we have enough diversity of our economy to supply the jobs for not only for today but in the future. Second, I think the state has some significant financial situations that are now approaching them, and they are going to have to figure out how to balance that and manage it well, because if they don't, it could jeopardize everything you can imagine, from healthcare programs, from Medicaid that's delivered to Alaskans, to education, to road construction, to aviation, to you name it. So that budget issue, and I guess last and long, I think pretty important, is making sure that we as Alaskans recognize the natural resources we have here and a balance and approach in and how to develop them so they meet the community needs, but also provide the economic and opportunity for people who want to work in those fields. I think when you look at it, that's kind of connected to the first priority, which is jobs. But I think those are some of the ones that are right on the forefront. There's a lot of other issues, as we just talked about with education. I think there's a huge risk that people are putting, or the legislature may be putting at risk, our long-term future for a really short-term political gain on education, which would be, I think, a big mistake.
Okay. And some of the other ones I've got here, CNN, I'm sure you've seen, CNN just recently did a series on sex crime in Alaska and spousal abuse and yeah. issues that in this state we're pretty well aware of. How do you see the state making progress on that? Is there something more that can be done either at the state level or at the federal level in order to help that progress along?
Well, I think, you know, the state has attempted through kind of public relations campaigns to go after that issue, but in reality, it really takes a hard look at the resources. For example, I have a piece of legislation federally that I've put together on Safe Families and Villages Act. This allows tribes to put into place judicial processes that can bring perpetrators to justice who are dealing with sexual assault, substance abuse, domestic violence on a localized level. We think it's a great opportunity for local communities to take command of these very important issues, and honestly, too high statistics in these areas. We are getting huge pushback from the state on this. They don't like it. They think it's too much control to local communities. I think it's the reverse. The state system is broken. It's not, you know, you got repeat offender rates in the high 60s. You have, with our Alaska Native population, double the percent averages in the state, and we're just not having the success. And so I proposed this idea as one that I think is an important piece. There are other things that I think the state could do in regards to shelters and services that are needed.
Okay. And then finally, I've had quite a few folks ask me about the upcoming election, because obviously you are up for election later on this year.
Yes.
Right now, we still don't know who your opponent's going
right.
to be.
Won't know till August.
Right, but you know, there has been even some national news about the Alaska Senate campaign and the Alaska Senate race, just because it could make the difference in what party has the majority. Obviously, so you know, recently. You were attacked by regarding the carbon tax and your position on a carbon tax. Mm-hmm. And I've since read some statements from you regarding that. But just I guess just to let you make it crystal clear, where are you at on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you have is a group that's a third party group funded by the Koch brothers who. As you know, they own the Flint Hill Refinery in Fairbanks. They're closing it down, kicking 80 Alaskans out of jobs and not taking full responsibility for the water that's dirty up there. This is the same group that's now running an ad that two independent groups have verified is false, and they continue to claim that I support a carbon tax. I do not support a carbon tax, and I'll say it as many times as I need to, but again, I don't support a carbon tax. I think if the issue is how do we go after climate change, which is the bigger issue, and that's what I've always talked about, there's many different ways that you can attack that issue. And when I was mayor, we did everything from capturing our methane gas out of the landfill to changing our lights out in the streets to more energy-efficient lights to building buildings on a high-level energy standard. There's a lot of ways you can do this to change the dynamics of your fuel sources or energy efficiency. But again, to make it very clear, those ads they're running are not true. But they will run them because they don't care about Alaska. They only care about their power in Washington, and they will throw us overboard as quick as they can blink an eye or as quick as they're closing up Flint Hills.
Okay. And another election-based question here. Another kind of consistent theme of criticism that your potential opponents use is, and there's varying percentages that I've seen, 93, 97, 90, that you vote with the Democratic majority, or with specifically with Harry Reid, 97% of the time is the most recent claim I've heard.
Yeah.
Can you?
Soon it'll be 110%. I caused a 64th earthquake. Let me say this: that when you look at that data, they've been very selective of the type of votes they take. But put those aside. What are my votes that matter? I think when you talk to Lisa Murkowski and you look at her vote totals and mine, when it comes to Alaska issues, we're 100%. We support Alaska issues. And, you know, if now they're saying that I vote a certain way, what does that say about Senator Murkowski? The fact is, they will say whatever they need to say because they know that President Obama is not popular in the state, so they want to tie everything possible, me to him. But the fact is, you know, I've had to argue and fight for oil and gas development in the Arctic against the Obama administration. I didn't support the president on Syria when he wanted to go into Syria. I didn't support the administration on their gun restriction laws. I can go through the list of things that I've disagreed with this administration on, especially when it affects Alaska. So I understand they'll make the percentages up based on whatever data point they want to collect at that moment. But how I measure my success is what's the delegation doing, and how are we doing it together? And when you look at Alaska issues, we're 100%. And at the end of the day, that's what matters.
Okay. Well, that takes care of most of the questions.
Excellent.
I had.
Those are a good variety pack. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
No, I think that was great. Thanks for letting me in. I like your idea that you put on Facebook to get some of those questions. That was a great idea.
Yeah, sure. Well, and, you know, anytime you find yourself up in this neck of the woods, feel free to stop in.
I will do it.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.